Last week I did a podcast on polyvagal theory, and I received some questions and comments about it related to therapy. Today on Ask Dr. Gill, I want to go through the issues with polyvagal theory as it relates to therapy. So stay tuned. Welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I'm Dr. Gill Winkleman, and today on the podcast, I want to go back through some of the polyvagal theory information, and this is just audio this time. There's less visuals today, but I wanted to kind of clarify something about what I said to start. And by the way, if you have questions or comments, feel free to send them to info, I-N-F-O, at askdrgill.com, A-S-K-D-R-G-I-L.com. And I try and get back to people in a relatively timely manner. But what I noticed with this comment from people is they were asking whether therapy is useful or not because of something I had said during the podcast. And what I want to clarify is, yes, therapy is absolutely useful and very important, I think, for healing for a lot of people, even with trauma or non-trauma situations. I think therapy can be useful to just get a third-party voice in our lives and understanding where there are issues and problems in the situations that are going on. But I think that what we see with, I think that what can be confusing is understanding what constitutes healing as it relates to psychotherapy. And I'm actually going to do another podcast about this in terms of what makes a good doctor, which I'll probably do next week. This is a question, though, in terms of therapy, that knowing and remembering something may or may not be helpful in terms of healing. And I think that's the point I was trying to make last week, because when there's trauma, remembering the trauma can actually be more traumatizing to a person. Now, sometimes it is useful in terms of understanding what had happened to us. So, for example, if you don't remember that your father dropped you on your head when you were six, just using a benign and or not so benign example, that remembering that can be useful from the standpoint of understanding that it was an accident. And so then you can have compassion for your father as opposed to thinking he did it on purpose. And I'm using a somewhat trite example just to be obvious about this, because there's always shades of subtlety in these situations. But in terms of the neurology and the nervous system, remembering that may not have the impact that we would think it would have based on what, you know, modern culture is saying about psychotherapy. I mean, think about how many programs you've watched where people have memories of something and that memory cures them. And maybe that's true, and maybe it's not. And I think the point is, in terms from a neurological perspective, it's allowing the body to reset itself that is what will allow the healing to occur. If that happens through the memory and a recall of the event, so be it, right? But in terms of what I've seen with polyvagal theory treatments, it's more about allowing the nervous system to reset. And that is not necessarily related to having a memory of an event. So, for example, Peter Levine, in his book, Waking the Tiger, he talks about a man he worked with who had been attacked by dogs when he was like 7 years old. And in the real event, the dogs rip his pants, which is an important cultural fact in terms of this case, because there was shame related to that because they were new and it happened to be a piece of the culture. They were part of his rite of passage, I believe. And he remembered his father being angry. And when he went through the event with Dr. Levine, he realizes his father was angry because the dogs attacked him. So that's a situation where a memory can be useful, remembering the event. But the healing, according to Dr. Levine, happened when the man felt the rage that he had been holding on to as a result of the dogs attacking him. These were a pack of stray dogs, and fortunately he had been rescued and not eaten alive in the situation. And so he had been in a fight-flight mode, and then when the dogs chased him down, he goes into freeze mode. Not unusual, particularly for a child. In the recollection of the event with Dr. Levine, and I want to be clear, the event memory was not necessary for the healing. And it's just this case happened to have both. He felt the rage, he felt the desire to fight, and he felt the desire to flee. And I think those pieces are important as part of the healing process. So it's the parts of that were allowing for this man to heal. And he felt the rage. He firmly felt the rage. And he firmly felt the flight as well. So we're going to take a quick break, and on the other end of the break, I'm going to go into more detail about how the body releases this trauma, or at least how we think it releases this trauma. So stay tuned. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Gil Winkelman, and this is Ask Dr. Gil, the podcast. And today we're talking about polyvagal theory and psychotherapy and different ways to treat the nervous system. And the thing about the case that I was talking about that was interesting is the way this is described, and by the way, I've seen this with patients as well, is that when one is in a state of fight or flight and then goes into freeze, The healing happens when you can release the freeze and feel the fight flight response. And that allows for the system to reset. Because what's happening otherwise is that you're in a state of both fight and flight, fight flight, and freeze at the same time. And it can look like you can't respond to events and that you're in a parasympathetic mode, but really you're in a mode where you're stuck. And so in this case with this man who had been chased by dogs, he started shaking. And he shook for, you know, I don't actually don't know, but I'm going to guess at least 30 to 60 minutes. And Dr. Levine described something. He had handed the patient a roll of paper towels, which he tore in half, which is an incredible feat of strength, but also it just shows the level of rage this person was holding on to as a result of this situation. And before this session, he was unable to really move forward with his life, which is no wonder. He was stuck. So this is where I think the therapy requires some kind of somatic work to be able to engage with that sense and then release it. Now, this is an issue, and you may be wondering this. How does one get in contact with that feeling when they're disconnected? And this is the magic of psychotherapy. This is where a good psychotherapist can definitely help. And there are techniques to do this, by the way, some of which work for some people and others work for other people. And if you were to ask me, hey, do you think this will work for me? The answer is going to be, I don't know, because clearly there is a lack of understanding in terms of what therapies work for who, when. And sometimes therapies work for someone at a particular time in their life and not at another time. So what are some of these therapies? Well, neurofeedback is one of them. I've talked about neurofeedback in previous podcasts. Basically, in the therapy, the practitioner hooks the person up to electrodes. It's usually touching parts of their head. Sometimes it's the ears. There are different types of neurofeedback, but basically there is either signals going to the brain or there is a reward system to the brain to be in a particular state. And the thing about neurofeedback is that certain types of neurofeedback, I won't say all of them, but certain types of neurofeedback are helping the body release the stuckness, if you will, in the nervous system. But it's doing it at the neuronal level. And so it's going from almost like a top-down perspective, if you will. Now, there's also heart rate variability training, heart math. I believe I've done a podcast on that. That's kind of going from a bottom-up perspective in a sense, because you're calming the heart space down. Now, what's interesting about that is as we slow down, a lot of times the sensations start to come to us. And that's where a somatic therapy would work from, is that it's going to work on helping you be in your body and experiencing what it is that you are feeling in this moment. So, for example, if you have, say, I'll use a personal example. I had tightness in my shoulder, and it came on from, actually, it came on after a long airplane flight. But I surf a lot, so I could have had shoulder tightness. Well, as I allowed that to let go, I felt this sense of that I was raising my shoulder to protect my neck. And so I felt into that. And it's, you know, this is not an intellectual process, just so we're clear. So I just felt the feeling of protection in my body. And so eventually that let go. And sometimes it will move to another part of the body. You know, it could have moved down my arm. And so then I would feel that. So it's an experience of what am I feeling right now in my body? And I don't push it away. And I don't try and make it go away. I don't judge it. I don't do anything except observe it and allow it to be there. And as you observe, something shifts, and that shift is what you're looking for. Now, I've had patients who've done this, and they break into tears as a result of that. And one of the somatic therapies, by the way, is trauma-informed yoga. A lot of times there's a yin yoga aspect to this where you're holding poses for a long time. And particularly when you get into the hips, because people store a lot of emotion in their hips and their pelvis, people will break down crying in the middle of a class. And I say this not because it's a bad thing. I say this because oftentimes people are afraid of feeling the experience or breaking down in front of other people. And so be aware that that is a possibility, that that can happen. And there are other forms of therapy, real quick, that I will talk about, brain spotting and EMDR, which are kind of related. But they're using the eye movements and the position of the eyes to access the experience and the feeling. So if you look up and to the right, for example, that will give you insight and memory into a particular place, whereas looking down into the left may give you a different experience. It's not so much that you're trying to figure out where a particular memory is, as much as what's going on in that moment when you look in that particular direction. And EMDR is a little different in that it's a little more guided. There's definitely more structure to the EMDR, you know, situation. So anyway, I hope this is helpful to help you understand. And I guess if I would say, if there's one thing about polyvagal theory and somatic therapies that you get, it's understanding that the body can go into a freeze mode. And that freeze mode usually is preceded by a sympathetic dominance, a fight-flight event. And after that, you are still in the fight-flight experience, even though you aren't experiencing yourself as in fight or flight. You're experiencing yourself as seemingly relaxed, but it's really freeze. And one of the things about freeze mode I didn't mention earlier or in the other podcast is that a lot of times when we go into freeze mode, we're releasing a lot of endorphins and natural opiates, because that's how our body, the mode is designed to make us not realize what is happening. It's a dissociative event. And so you can have really good feelings related to that, but you are actually dissociated from yourself. And so the question then is how do you come back into it? And that's where the somatic therapies, that's where a good somatic therapist will have you sit, be in your body, experience what it is that you need to experience in that moment. So I hope this is helpful. And if you have questions or comments, again, please feel free to reach out. It's at info@askdrgill.com. And remember that I have the course on my website, askdrgill.com, which doesn't so much go into this other than to talk about the physiology, because this issue with the fight, flight, freeze is affecting inflammation, methylation, mitochondria, and is a big part of the issues with disease in modern society. So thanks again for joining me, and I look forward to seeing you on the next podcast.